Good morning and greetings in the name of Jesus. It's good for us to be here and think about those truths from our Sunday school lesson. Some of you maybe heard me give this story, so I apologize if it's a repeat for you, but I thought about it in the Sunday school lesson in relation to accepting others and how we feel toward others. And this happened quite a number of years ago. I forget exactly the setting even. A couple things have stayed very clear in my mind. But I remember meeting a man, and it was just kind of in passing. And he'd gotten off his Harley. He was, of course, wearing his leather. He had tattoos all over his arms, and I think even some on his face, maybe. And we got to talking a little bit. And I admit that my biases or my assumptions were all working well. And so I had pretty well classified him as the kind of person I thought he was. Until he shocked me almost speechless by saying that he is a Christian. He became a Christian. He found the Lord. And he said, and my mission is to preach Christ to the biker gangs. And I hardly knew what to say. You know, it's those little surprises we get sometimes when we think about how our biases are as strong as what they are. Our assumptions, you know, where I never met the man again, it was just in passing. But, you know, I've never forgot that, you know, about myself. And we have a tendency to be far too judgmental at times, not understanding, not realizing the spiritual journey that others are on. All right, this morning I'm going to, this message is probably more of a teaching type message. It's probably of more of interest to young people. And I'd like to think this morning for a little while about the journey of Christian courtship. At least I think most young people have an interest in the subject of courtship, and sometimes whether they say so or not, but I think it's there. Proverbs names some things that are too wonderful or mysterious to fully understand, and one of these is the way of a man with a maid. I would also like to say that in relation to courtship, it's not just young people that have an interest in courtship, because, you know, as parents with teenagers, we have an interest in this and how this is all going to work out and how our involvement should be. I believe also the church, the Christian church, has a very deep interest in this as well. When we think about our youth and our goals for them, and the simple fact that strong homes equal strong churches. And so therefore, the strength of the homes of a congregation directly relate to the strength of that congregation. And so we are interested, we care, and we're concerned. Turn with me now to Ephesians 5. I'm going to read a few verses here that really, they're talking about marriage, and so they're not really talking about courtship, but I believe it's, we think about marriage and Christian marriage and what God intends it to be and the beauty of it, when it works the way God intends it to work, you can say this is the goal of the journey in relation to Christian courtship. Ephesians 5:24, therefore, as the church is subject unto Christ, so let the wives be to their own husbands in everything. Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it, that he might sanctify and cleanse it with the washing of water by the word, that he might present it to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that it should be holy and without blemish. So ought men to love their wives as their own bodies. He that loveth his wife loveth himself. For no man ever yet hated his own flesh, but nourisheth and cherisheth it, even as the Lord the church. For we are members of his body, of his flesh, and of his bones. For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother, and shall be joined unto his wife, and they two shall be one flesh. This is a great mystery, but I speak concerning Christ and the church. Nevertheless, let every one of you in particular so love his wife, even as himself, and the wife see that she reverence her husband. Now, how are you going to get to that point when these ideals are lived out in our lives? And I realize that I'm giving this message this morning from the perspective, maybe this is a bias, a perspective of Western culture, where young people in general choose their partners. Now, we could go to other cultures where it is the parents that choose the companion or the wife or the husband for their son or daughter. And what I find interesting is that in general, we kind of look at that idea and we don't really know how to relate to that. Young men, would you like your father and mother to pick who your wife should be? Or for the girls, an offer is made, and it's up to your parents to decide whether this should be your husband or not. That's a totally different culture, right? We have a hard time relating to that. But the fact is that it works in that culture. And the divorce rate here in North America is many, many times more, where young people basically choose their own, make their own choice. I'm not saying without any influence or help, but I'm just saying make their own choice, versus a culture where the parents, and I remember reading about a young man who was questioned by someone from the Western culture, saying that, who lived in Eastern culture, and they said, well, how does that ever work? Like, you mean you let your parents choose who your wife is going to be? And like, doesn't that bother you? And he said, no. He said, it doesn't bother him. He said, how would I, with no experience in this, be able to successfully pick who my wife would be? I don't know anything about this. He said, I wouldn't trust myself to do that. Interesting, isn't it? So, again, we're giving this message this morning from a Western cultural viewpoint. And we're not trying to change all that, but there are some things I think we should think about. Now, just some thoughts and introduction in relation to our view of courtship. You know, that we believe the primary purpose of courtship is to find God's will in choosing a life companion. And secondly, it is to learn to relate together in preparation for the marriage. Those, I think, are the two issues, two things that you want to think about. It is to properly make a choice in understanding this person. And secondly, then, you can say the choice or the decision maybe is made sooner than, of course, a betrothal or an engagement. But then it is also then a time of preparation to learn to know and to relate together. I remember my girlfriend, who now is my wife, we talked about this, that we wanted to not rush in our courtship because I would prefer to know as much, or it was us, we preferred to know as much about the other and work through those things ahead of time rather than to rush into a marriage relationship and then have to sort it out. I just think there's a way that can be done that is helpful and beneficial. Of course, it's not the same for everyone. But it is that is the primary purpose, those two things, to find God's will in choosing a life companion and then also learning to relate together in preparation for marriage. It is not merely for social enjoyment. Of course, although it is an enjoyable time of life, it is not because of social status or feeling peer pressure, just because all your friends expect it. It's a choice that has to be consciously made in the fear of God. I also are right with that. It's a very important part of discerning God's will is discerning how compatible the two of you are in relation to spiritual, social, emotional, and intellectual expectations. It doesn't mean that you're going to be exactly the same. Sometimes, you know, the saying is that opposites attract. That is only partly true, I believe. If two people are too opposite, well, then there's probably grounds for marriage problems. You know what I mean? If they're too diverse. Now, I realize that, you know, say a person is very talkative and outgoing. You know, a lot of times they don't necessarily choose someone that is equally as outgoing and as talkative because somebody has to be quiet and listen. You know, you can't have it, you know. So there is some contrast. I understand that. But at the same time, to simply say, you know, one person is opposite of the other, no, that's not really accurate. There should be similar levels of expectation, like I said, in relation to spiritual, social, emotional, and intellectual levels. This, of course, does not mean that two people have the exact same personality. We talked about that. But there's going to be a reasonably the same amount same level of expectations for the marriage. I'll give you just a very basic illustration. A young man grows up in a home where his mother or his sisters, you know, keep a very neat, tidy house. You know, meals are on time. And, you know, things just run, you know, in that way. You know, if he's looking for a young woman who comes from a home where things are more chaotic and things are not always in place and mealtimes can happen whenever. And just use it as a practical illustration. See the level of expectation, you know what I mean? If it's not close to the same, there's probably going to be stress maybe, or misunderstanding. There's going to be some things to work through. I'm not saying you can't be a happy marriage, but the level of expectations are not the same. And you can apply that to a lot of other things, whether it's spiritual expectations. You know, a couple doesn't agree on which church to attend. You got a problem. See, the expectation level is different. And so that's what we're talking about. If two individuals bring widely differing levels of expectation to the marriage, one of those or both of them will usually find that their personal needs are unmet in relation to various things. I remember a man, young man got married. He was not a member of the church. He actually worked with us for a while. But, socially, he chose a girl from another country. It was when, maybe it's still happening, but when there was a lot of men that struggled to find a marriage companion here would go to another country, which is fine, nothing wrong with that. But a very hasty marriage. He was an intellectual, and she was very obviously not. He was a country boy and loved his privacy out in the bush. And she was scared spitless of being away from people out of a big city. And you just watch that. They're still together today. They've adopted two boys, I believe. But the struggle, they just weren't on the same page at all on very few things. You know what I mean? And yes, it's a marriage. You know, it works, more or less, but what I'm saying is, you know, again, it's that compatibility, the expectation. And one person then is going to have their needs, you know, not met in that relationship, whether socially, intellectually. He loved to have deep intellectual conversations, and he was very well-read. And she didn't have that level, you know, at all. Now, I don't mean to make this sound complicated or idealistic, but I'm just verbalizing some of these, you know, what I believe important basics, and we'll talk about these as we go through the message to help us understand. Of course, the goal is to produce a strong, solid, fulfilling, and happy relationship in relation to marriage. Now, thinking about courtship as a journey, I'm just going to use a simple analogy that we all understand. That is like it's getting ready for a trip or getting ready to go on a trip or a journey. It's like traveling from point A to point B, from being single to being happily married. That's the goal. And what things are important to know in thinking about this journey of courtship in your life as a young person? Well, first of all, you need to be old enough and have passed some tests before you begin driving. I'm going to use this analogy right through this message in relation to driving, going on a trip, just as a way of remembering these things and as a way of outlining this message. So just as it would be very, rather unwise for a 15, 16-year-old to go on an extended trip by themselves with another young person their age, who never traveled before together and never drove very much or hard at all before, you say, well, that's kind of unwise. That's not going to work out probably too well. You know, and while we have always felt that, a minimum age should be 18, sometimes older is even better. But it's a matter of maturity. The issue is maturity. To have worked through some things on a personal level so that a person is ready to take on more responsibility. Taking on the whole relationship of a courtship is taking on responsibility. And so a person does want to see some maturity before we do that. On the other side, I think there can be a trend of waiting too long and putting off this thing. The Bible does say that, marriage is good, and he that findeth a wife findeth a good thing. And it is so marriage is given by God in a positive light. And so sometimes I think the trend can be in the last, 10, 20 years for young people to wait longer, at least in some settings. That is okay if that's God's will, for sure, but that can also bring its own set of difficulties. Now, number two, it's always good to have someone who has traveled the unknown road ahead of you to give you advice on your journey. The greatest benefits while on a trip usually come from listening to someone who have traveled this road before and can help us plan our trip. I remember as a boy, I was probably, I would have been about 12 years old when our family drove to Guatemala and made that trip. And driving down through Mexico, of course, all the way from Maryland, East Coast, all the way down through and Texas, we crossed to Brownsville and drove the length of Mexico into Guatemala. I still have a lot of good memories of that trip. And I remember one of the things that we had along, and I don't remember the name of this. It was like a travel log or a travel. It wasn't just an atlas. It was more than that. But it was someone who had taken these same roads numerous times, and they had all these little interesting things, that you could follow along. And, here's an interesting stop, or here's, this is something interesting about this little town or something. And I just remember that as really making that trip extra exciting for a 12-year-old. It was just that it was always something that you could identify along the way. And so there are those who have gone ahead of us in life. And you think about courtship is certainly one of those, where there are many that have traveled this path and can give a lot of good advice. You have many resources as young people in relation to this to help you in this journey of courtship. Parents should normally be your greatest resource, but there are many others who would be glad to help you to think through the issues. And please don't just take off on this journey without seeking some good advice and insight. You may not arrive where you hope to be. And I, in my years of in the ministry, as well as watching church life and individual relationships, family relationships, one thing that you realize is that not everyone that sets off on this journey of courtship gets to where they thought they were going to be. And sad to say, there are situations that I think that if people had, gotten a little more help, not saying that they necessarily chose the wrong person to go with them, but on that journey into marriage, but if they had, maybe gotten some more help along the way, it could have changed some things for them. So also, you will need to decide who your traveling companion will be. And I know we talked about this as one of the initial and most important or primary things in relation to courtship is discerning God's will. And I know the question is on young people's minds sometimes, you know, like how do I discern God's will? How do I know? How do I find my way with this? Well, there's different ways to think about this. I do have I didn't bring it along, but I do have a paper at home that was written up. I think it goes back to Bible school days, a whole list of questions in relation to discerning God's will and choosing a life companion. So it's a question and answer paper. I'd gladly give you copies of that if anyone wants that. But there's good help in relation to this. No one starts out intending to have an unhappy marriage. Do you ever know of anyone that started dating with the intention to have an unhappy marriage? I mean, it's very simple, right? The intention is there's ideals, there's goals to have the blessing and the home, the peace that God wants us to have. That's what we want. Now, with that then, in discerning God's will in relation to this, sometimes the question is, does God have only one certain person picked out for me? And we can probably discuss this the rest of the day and still not come to a full conclusion on it, maybe. Does God only have one specific person? Now, I know it's nice to feel that way and to think that way, and I think that when we arrive at the destination of marriage and we take our marriage vows, there is only one person, naturally. That's the way it is. I don't think, though, we should take it to the mystical side and say it has to be just that perfect person, that only one person that God has in all the world that would work for a marriage companion. I don't believe we should do that. Love is a choice. Love is a commitment. It's like someone said already that we choose our love and then we love our choice. You know, and I think that, you know, two dedicated Christian people that are careful in working through the details like we're talking about here this morning in relation to compatibility, in relation to the levels of expectations in your life, I believe that it's not that mystical one person only idea necessarily. So if the other person is within my expectations of respect and compatibility in each of these four areas like we've talked about, I think there can be a happy, successful marriage. You know, the four areas of expectation, again, are spiritual, social, emotional, and intellectual. And two individuals together should have similar levels of expectation in these areas. Now, another thing in relation to deciding who your traveling companion will be, I just like to use this analogy too, and you'll find this interesting. Remember that picking up hitchhikers can be dangerous. We're talking about choosing a life companion on this journey, point A to point B, being single to being married. In traveling, I'm not saying we should never pick up hitchhikers, but just remember that picking up hitchhikers can be dangerous. I'll just say it this way. For young men, it may be the young woman that often tries to get the attention of the boys. They're trying a little bit too hard to get asked. For the girls, it may be the young man that pretends to show interest but isn't serious. He maybe is just liking the attention he gets but isn't really ready to ask. And he can just be playing with your feelings. Also, I think another thing to remember in relation to trying to decide or the need to decide who your traveling companion will be is to recognize that, and it's one of the misconceptions of many times in courtship or in choosing a companion, choosing a partner, and that is that, yes, most of the things are okay, but there's a couple things that I'm going to change about this person. If that is how we're going into courtship, it's probably going to be not work out so good. Not saying that we can't change our, you know, anything about a partner in marriage. But actually going into a marriage intending to do that is probably going to result in conflict. In general, we become, as we get older, we become more of what we already are. Just remember that. You will become, or your friend will become, more of what you already are. Now, I'm not saying there's no exceptions to that, and there's the grace of God, and I'm not saying, you know, all those things are in place. I'm talking about general, like personality and things like that. I admit, you know, I'm not going to tell you what all these are, but I admit that, you know, there's habits and things that I wish that I would be different, do differently. And my wife has helped me. She probably didn't even know she was helping me always, but I watch some things and how she does some things, and I learn from that, you know, that I'm not as organized as she is, you know. I guess I told you one. But so we can change, but I'm just saying that to go into a marriage saying, I'm going to change this, I'm going to fix this, I'm going to change this about this person, is not a good idea. All right, number four, you should know how to read the map. Going on a long trip. Now, I know today we have GPS and all, a lot of other things, but you should be able to read a map. You understand what I'm saying? You should be able to understand, you know, and to find your way. Just as reading a map is important to navigate highways, so it is, you know, it is good to have that working knowledge of the scriptures. It's very important in this part of the journey of courtship. Not only personally, but also together in a shared devotional time in courtship. You know, to have your relationship, your courtship grounded on spiritual truth and spiritual life. That is so important. And it's the blessing that gives stability and strength to that relationship. A person, either one, you know, must know how to feed his or her own soul from God's word. To not have that strong spiritual life, you know, and going into a relationship like this, there's going to be tests, there's going to be new responsibilities, and there's going to be new accountabilities. And so if we are wavering in our spiritual life, you know, and it's kind of up and down, you know, we're not in a good position then because we don't really know how to read the map, as it were. We don't know how to guide ourselves, because our spiritual life is not what it ought to be. I think this is especially true for a young man who, if this journey comes to its conclusion in marriage, is going to be given a responsibility, a spiritual responsibility, that it is broader than just his own spiritual life, but he's taking responsibility for the spiritual life of his wife. And so it is important to have that ability to know the scriptures, to be a spiritual person. Number five, make sure your vehicle is mechanically sound. Would you consider it wise to begin a long trip with an engine that continually overheats, or maybe doesn't, it only starts whenever it feels like it, or, you know, you go down the list. You say, well, that's not really a good idea. Then why do sometimes young people do this in relation to courtship? And the journey of courtship. This includes personal maturity. Personal maturity means that you have learned to respect your parents. I realize that going through the struggles of the teenage years sometimes, you know, it's not uncommon. I'm not saying it should be this way or even it's right. But it's not uncommon for young people, adolescents, to struggle at times as they're getting older, struggle with the authority of their parents or the wishes of their parents. But I would say this morning, as a general statement, you know, that if we are going to be mature and to enter into this journey, to have a, as we say, a vehicle that is mechanically sound, we need to have learned some of those basic maturity truths. And that is, we need to know how to respect our parents. I talked about Eastern culture, where it's the parents that pick the your girlfriend or boyfriend, to pick your partner. Now that shows a lot of respect for parents, doesn't it? Our tendency in Western culture is to somehow justify, you know, young people being more free-thinking outside of the realm of their parental wishes. And I just want to stress this because I think it's so important. You know, if you as a young person are going to go against the advice of your parents, you better be very careful. That seldom works out well. Unless we can find repentance and make things right and clear that. You know the story of Samson. You know, he had gone down there, was it to Timnath? He came back there and he had some friends down there. They weren't very good friends. They were actually enemies of Israel. But he saw a girl down there. He saw a woman down there and he liked her. And he came back and he told his parents, "Get her, for she pleaseth me well." His parents said, "Well, isn't there like a young woman in Israel that, you know, you could have for your wife?" "No, that's the one." Well, we know how that turned out. Remember also, in relation to personal maturity, not only is it respect for parents, but respect for brotherhood agreements and guidelines. You know, so sometimes over the years, you know, this happens in the background. Most of you never know this. But as ministry, we get calls. We get calls from usually fathers, sometimes other ministers and other congregations. All of a sudden you get a call, someone says, "You know, this young man has asked my daughter for a special relationship, to start a courtship." And then there's usually some questions that we need to answer in those conversations. How does this young man relate to his parents? Or how does this young man relate to the church? Is he respectful of church guidelines? How does he handle his money? You know, those are common questions. It's happening all the time. Or it may be that it can be the other way around as well. Sometimes a father will call and say, "You know, my son is considering asking this young girl from your congregation. What do you have to say about her?" You know, he hasn't asked her yet, but he wants to know what you, as a pastor, as a minister, would say about her. How does she relate to her parents? Is she neat and tidy? Is she a good housekeeper? Is she frivolous, or how does she relate? You know, all those things. What I'm saying is that goes on behind the scenes. The person always wants to be entirely factual, entirely fair. But what I'm saying is that's the concern. That's the spiritual maturity we're talking about. Because as parents, there is that concern. And any of you parents with teenagers understand that concern. You know, I remember one father saying to me, this was years ago, about a young man interested in his daughter. He said, "I just have a lot of questions about this." He said, "I put a lot of time and energy into my daughter, and I'm not going to sell her cheap." But you understand that concern. It's on your heart, right? What did Rebecca say to Isaac? You know, when it was, you know, Jacob was getting older, and Rebecca probably knew as a mother that he was going to be looking for a wife. And Rebecca said, you know, if she told Isaac, she said, you know, if Jacob goes and takes a wife from the daughters of Heth, which is what Esau had done, she said, what is my life good be? That's the burden on the heart of a parent in relation to their young people. And I just want to say to you as young people, please respect that and understand that. Because your parents have been down that road ahead of you. They know you better than anyone else. They know your strengths. They know your weaknesses. They have a really good idea what's probably going to work and what's probably not going to work. And from that perspective, your parents are some of your best guides in this. Does this young person have the spiritual maturity to respect civil law and traffic laws? And are they self-disciplined? How do they spend their money or save their money? And all those things are part of a personal maturity. Because if you ask, say as a young man, you ask a young woman to trust you, You're going to enter into courtship in a relationship where you're going to at some point expect her to give her heart to you. And you're going to be in a relationship that at some point, you know, you're going to be her spiritual head, her spiritual leader. Is she going to be able to trust you? Can she look up to you and admire you for the qualities you have? That's all part of the success and her security in life. Well, remember that embarking on this journey of courtship doesn't guarantee a successful arrival. Even the greatest send-off can't guarantee a happy arrival. Now, I'm not talking about marriage problems. I'm talking about a successful courtship. Now, I would like to say that every courtship is successful. Sometimes there's roadblocks. Maybe we'll talk about that a little bit later. But there's situations that arise in this whole thing of courtship where the realization is that this is probably not going to work. Those are difficult. To help, as parents helping young people through those times, and it can be painful. But just remember that embarking on this journey of courtship doesn't guarantee a successful arrival. I think it also means, and I think this is a trend that we ought to think about. Maybe as parents, we can give some direction to our young people. And that is that I'm concerned at times, and it just bothers me when announcing or when it becomes public that a young couple has begun a courtship, there's a lot of ado made about that. It's almost a celebration. Remember that the grandest send-off doesn't guarantee a successful arrival. If you know what I mean. Like, we're only starting this now. We're only beginning this to try to decide whether it is God's will and whether it can work and whether these two people, you know, are going to be in agreement and make it work. Now, what happens is, if this trend continues or advances, what can happen is, we're happy when a young couple begins dating. Don't get me wrong. It's not that we're not enthused or happy about it. But there's a pressure put on that young couple then later if things just aren't working out too well. And it just looks like, you know, we're just not on the same page enough to continue this courtship. Then, you know, the stigma can be so strong against stopping a courtship. It's not really fair to the couple. I'd rather see if there's going to be an ado made or, you know, or whatever, that kind of gets ramped up, you know, and as, you know, maybe engagement would be the better time to make some, you know, congratulations and things like that, because that means that they're arriving. Anyway, just something to think about. And so sometimes I think there's just a little too much ado made when they're only beginning the journey, they're only starting. Just give them a little time because it might not work. And then I know, you know, you got to, you know, what do you do then? You know, do you give back all these gifts? And, you know, you got to sort out, you know what I mean? And, you know, the pictures and everything. And you're trying to dissolve this thing. Well, maybe if they would have started and paced that a little bit slower, they wouldn't, you know, be in that predicament. So just remember, embarking on this journey of courtship doesn't guarantee a successful arrival. Now, successful in the sense of becoming married, but I believe that every courtship is successful even if it ends before marriage and find the relationship is broke off, because they found God's will, and therefore that was the purpose of it. So let's not make it hard for couples in the courtship time of life by complicating it for them when finally we realize, or they realize, that it's not going to work. Number 7, be ready to ask directions along the way to avoid getting lost. Openness to observations and help from others can save us many wasted miles. You know, if you face some questions, talk to someone. Don't just try to keep it going when it feels like it's just not moving forward. Because then you can really get lost. And I know of situations I've watched over the years a few times where there were roadblocks, there were things that maybe could have been looked at. And yet I think there was just a push to keep on going. The glamour of the courtship maybe hid some pitfalls that later had to be brought out and looked at and dealt with. Deal with the issue of distracted driving. I remember our bishop brother, he wasn't a bishop at the time, Brother Dave Burkholder, I remember when Esther and I started dating, and he talked to me. I still remember what he said. He said that the success of your courtship is going to, you'll be able to monitor it by whether your courtship actually enhances your spiritual life and your spiritual interests or whether it becomes a drag on it. And there's a lot of truth in that. Does the relationship, the courtship actually enhance my spiritual life and strength? Or has it become a drag on me, making it more difficult? It's a simple test. Call it distracted driving if you want. Are you able to share on the spiritual level? Or is it mostly just the light things that you discuss? You know, and I know that, you know, I'm not saying that a couple has to go have intense, you know, Bible studies all the time. I'm not saying that. But there should be a spiritual level that you can connect on. Because you want your relationship to be grounded in spiritual truth and spiritual life. Not just the frivolous things that that don't have the basis or a good foundation. One of the things that we deal with today that we didn't have to deal with when we were learning to drive was cell phones. You think about distracted driving. You know, there's signs sometimes along the highway, you know, leave your phone alone or, you know, don't pick up your phone and things like that. Well, think about that in relation to, you know, driving while impaired would also be another one of these. But just think about a cell phone in relation to being impaired. Impaired driving usually means that either you're under the influence of drugs or alcohol, you're intoxicated. It's usually what is referred to in relation to impaired driving, which we know is very dangerous. I'm thinking about this in relation to young people and courtship and the issues that we are facing now in our culture, in our time. There can be an intoxication with pleasure seeking. You know, always that little bit more, you know, it's another game or another, you know, just on and on. It can be an intoxication with pleasure seeking. Where is the time to just quietly help at home or do things to help someone else? That can be part of, you could say, an intoxication. What about being intoxicated with social media? So if I, as a young person, can hardly put my phone down, even when visiting in a social setting, what are you going to do when you start courting? Can you imagine a boyfriend and girlfriend sitting there on their phones? I think it's some disciplines that we need to think about in relation to that ahead of time. Driving while intoxicated with social media, all our friends. You know, when you begin a courtship, you begin a relationship, you have made an initial choice, not the final one yet, but the initial choice of focusing on that one person. I'm concerned, and you've heard me talk about this in relation to, as a congregation, cross-gender texting. And cross-gender texting as a group of young people, I'm not saying it never should happen in the right setting, but how are you going to come to that exclusive person in your life when you're freely texting girls with boys, boys with girls, you know, in a fun, frivolous, supposedly harmless way? How are you going to focus that on just that one person? You're going to have to cut off all those other friends one way or the other. How would your girlfriend feel if you as young men would be texting other girls? How would you as a young man would feel if you know your girlfriend is texting other boys? See, when are you going to stop doing that? in preparation for the journey of courtship. I just raise it because it's practical, and I think it's an issue. And finally, there is an exclusivity that belongs to our marriage relationship. You know, in a marriage vow, we say, in forsaking all others, keep yourself only to him or her as long as you both shall live. How are you going to start, when are you going to start excluding those other rivals in the social relationship? And to be on a journey of Christian courtship that's going to bring you to the destination of a happy, exclusive marriage relationship where there's that protection, that security of knowing that it's only the two of you in that relationship. We must also know how to keep our eyes on the road. That could be a part of what we just talked about. But let's be sure that we're not going to try to drive this, make this trip while we're impaired. Number 9, make sure you know how to change a flat tire. I confess that I haven't changed a flat tire for a long time. So I was thinking about the other day, I thought, you know what, my turn's probably coming one of these times. I don't even know if my jack works, and I don't even know if my spare tire even has any air in it. I don't think on my pickup I've ever gotten it out of there. I don't know what it's like. Okay, that's just an analogy. But we need to know how to change a flat tire. So what happens in a courtship, in a relationship? Because normally on a trip at some point, at least it used to be that way. I mean, I remember that you seldom went on like a 500-mile or kilometer trip without changing a flat tire. I mean, nowadays rubber has been improved and a lot of things are better, and we don't change tires near as often out on the highway. But in relation to courtship now, at some point, you're probably going to run into some differences of opinions in this relationship. You're going to run into some differences of convictions. Well, one feels this way, one feels that way. I remember hearing about a young couple years ago that got into this big discussion, almost argument, about eschatology. And I thought that was a very interesting disagreement to have in a courtship, but whatever. They both felt pretty strongly about it, and I don't know how that all turned out, but maybe one changed the other's mind about it. You know, some things matter and some things don't. That's obvious. But the fact is, you know, there can be misunderstandings. There can be, and I remember, it wasn't me directly involved in this, but I know one brother said to this young couple one time, they were getting close, or they were engaged, and he was talking to them about in relation to their marriage plan. He said, now, have you ever come across any differences at all? Do you ever disagree on anything? Oh, no, we never disagree on anything. Remember the bishop brother said, well, I'm just not sure you maybe should date a little longer. You know, maybe you haven't quite, you know. Because, okay, there shouldn't be a lot of disagreement. Otherwise, that could be another issue. But in the relationship, there's never been a time where it's like, we're on different pages here a little bit, you know, and we need to have this discussion, whether it's, you know, a person's saving money or, you know, spending money and how to spend, you know, and all those things. And there'd be a long list that you could have on this, or misunderstandings or a breakdown in communication in some area. I remember, I think my wife won't mind if I say this, but we were in our courtship one time. There was a young man that had been attending church for a while. And it was when the mission board, or at least the mission board was involved, but would get a van together and send to help young people get to Bible school, Numidia Bible School. And this young man, he was a little cynical about the church, but I tried to befriend him, you know, as a young fellow, tried to encourage him. Anyway, he put this story out that I had said that what I really like to do is get a van and get a whole bunch of girls to go with me to Bible school. And I just still remember that little conversation my girlfriend and I had to have about that. Of course, she had to take my word for it because, I mean, she didn't, but it came to her ears, and she felt she needed an answer for this from me. Whether that's really how I felt, and whether that's really... So what I'm saying is there's times that you have to know how to change a flat tire on the trip because there's things that may come up that should be talked about, should be cleared. It's important to learn to come to, you know, if there's a misunderstanding, come to compromise and understanding. You're two different people. You have two different viewpoints sometimes, and you need to bring them together. I don't think I'm going to get over all this, so we'll maybe continue this next Sunday. Number 10, keep enough fuel in the tank. I don't know of anybody that really likes running out of gas. Some people push it more to the edge than others. Maybe it makes a difference how often you've had to walk for gas as to how careful you are that the tank doesn't get too empty. But I think about this in relation to your spiritual life. I talked before about courtship being either a drag or an enhancing part of Christian life. Prayer must be the fuel of our lives. Praying to God for direction. And I think doing that together, it should be part of the first, pretty well the first date, the first date when you're spending time together. Begin a time of prayer. Pray together. I have fond memories of that. You're seeking God's will together. And that's, so therefore it's important to pray to God for direction and for wisdom and for his will. Attend church services together. Discuss the sermon. Discuss, you know, what you've read for your devotional life and, you know, have a devotional reading together. All those things are part of keeping that fuel in the tank, as it were, to have that journey be successful. I think I'm going to give one more. Number 11, obey the speed limits. Very simple, but not always so easy in courtship. Emotions or feelings can cause excessive speeds that will be dangerous. I say sometimes to young people, and I think it was because I was told this, and I think it's true, and that is make sure that your head is engaged before your heart. I've seen situations where young people who should have known better started a courtship relationship, and it was a rush of emotion, a lot of feelings. From almost the start of that courtship, they could hardly keep their hands off each other. I know in one particular case where it has ended in divorce or almost divorce. Isn't that sad? We like our emotions. Our emotions are good in a lot of ways, but our emotions can get us into a lot of trouble if we don't keep our heads engaged. And so there are things that must be thought or worked through in relation to the simple truth of respecting and obeying speed limits, the same as in traffic laws in relation to this journey of Christian courtship. And I would just like to say something to the young men, especially. It's almost always a tendency for young men to be in too much of a hurry in relation to courtship. Now, I'm talking about to the point of asking someone. I'm not saying it from that perspective. But once the relationship has started, you know, the young man has thought about this for quite a while, usually. You know, and he's, you know, thought through a lot of things, you know, and he asks this young sister, this young lady for a special friendship. And, you know, she did not really know that was coming, or at least not right now or whatever. She might have had some thoughts, but, you know, not for sure. And all of a sudden it's like, oh, there it is. Well, he's thought about it for months, probably, maybe years. And now she has to deal with it all right now. Kind of like, oh, am I saying yes or no? And so suppose she says yes. She agrees to start this, give this thing a try. And then, well, he's pretty tickled that he got a yes answer, right? So he's ready to go. So what can happen is you can start to feed the emotional side before there's really a strong foundation laid in relation to really knowing where we're at and the speed limits. You need to avoid the things that merely feed the emotional nature of the friendship. And sometimes it takes someone with older, with experience to help you see that. Because I think I can say this without making anybody feel bad, but I remember when one of our daughters, on a first date, he brought her, I think I have this right, but he brought her a whole handful of red roses. And I remember as a dad thinking, I don't know about that. You know, to me, I was shocked. Now maybe that courtship was successful, but it did not end at marriage. I'll say it that way. Now, maybe the young man didn't know that what red roses mean. You know, I don't know, but maybe somebody could have helped him understand that. I'm only using that as an illustration, but see, what happens is you can feed the emotional side of something that begins to push the emotional part of it, and you really haven't got the foundation in place. And all of a sudden, there's all these feelings, and what often happens, again, to the young men, is that you're already advancing this thing in your mind because this is a go, and you're quite enthused about it, and all of a sudden, you know, and there's the emotion getting raised in this relationship, and all of a sudden, she feels overwhelmed and she hits the brakes. And you see it happening over and over again when that happens. I mean, when that's the scenario. Too many pictures using endearing terms too early in the relationship. You know, failure to hold safe physical boundaries like hands off. You know, the reason we do that is we ask that and we want that for our young people in relation to a hands off policy. In relation to courtship is because you don't want to feed that emotional, the central side of it. Because it'll overwhelm your will. It's going to overwhelm your mind. And it can easily, you know, lead to wrong things. Not only that, but it also, it prevents you from focusing on the real issues that you should be thinking about in this relationship of compatibility and all those things. And so that's why we promote that. And want that because it will cloud your vision at too early of a time. So, of course, you have to limit the time spent together. And I've seldom talked to any young couple that thought they had too much time together. People looking on probably thought maybe they did, but the couple themselves, you know, I've been there, I understand it. But you have to limit the time spent together because you're pacing this thing, you're understanding the need for speed limit, you know, and how fast this must advance. You know, you're building for a lifetime. You know, don't ruin it by being in a big rush and then missing some of the important things that you should have been talking about. Don't allow this journey to consume your entire life. And we'll talk about that later in another message, but that can happen where, yes, it's good to be enthused and appreciate, you know, the relationship, but don't allow it to consume your entire life. On the other hand, spend enough time together to keep the friendship growing and going smoothly. May God help us, you as young people. I'm sure that you might have questions. You're welcome to hand in questions. You can do it anonymously if you want. But if you have questions along the way, certainly try to answer, encourage, and help. There's something very beautiful, I believe, and God has blessed it and wants it to be that way for, well, just like the Bible says, the way of a man with a maid. Solomon said, I can't explain that. There's something very beautiful about the leading of God, two people coming together, building that strong foundation, that mature relationship, and then go on to spend a lifetime of happiness and blessing together. That's what we want, and that's what God wants. Let's bow our heads for prayer.